Welcome. We're glad you've joined us for this Hand in Hand podcast. Hand in Hand is a nonprofit organization, and we provide information, classes, training, and lots of support for parents like you. We call our approach Parenting by Connection, and it's based on the insight that you deserve good support as you parent, and every child needs lots of connection in order to thrive. We offer tools to help you foster support for yourself and connection in your family. We hope this podcast gives you exactly the kind of support you're looking for.
Hello, everyone. My name is Madeline, and I'm a hand-in-hand instructor based in Sydney. And this is the call Staying Close to Preteens and Teens with Hand-in-Hand Parenting. And you're on the phone here with my colleague Rebecca, who's in Fairfax outside San Francisco in California. And I'll get her to introduce herself in a minute, but we know you're busy, so thank you so much for taking time to join us. We're going to talk about staying close to our preteens and older kids today. There's a lot going on at this stage of parenting, and we want to give you a picture of the changes that are happening for your child, and some of the challenges that present, and of how hand-in-hand parenting works to help you stay close and connected through the ups and downs. Rebecca, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah. Hi, everyone. My name is Rebecca, and I am a teacher in California. I've been teaching for about almost 20 years, from high school through preschool, and I'm also the parent of a 12-year-old and a 9-year-old little girls. And I was going to introduce Hand in Hand while we're giving everyone a little bit of time to join us. Hand in Hand is a nonprofit organization based in Palo Alto, California, founded in 1989. Hand in Hand offers parents 5 listening tools that help us put our connected relationship with our children at the center. The idea is that the highs and lows of family life need to be understood within the context of our overall relationship with our children, and not as a series of isolated interactions or behaviors to be managed. The main ideas behind this approach are, first of all, that parents need and deserve support for the very hard emotional work of parenting. Second, that our children are born to feel connected with us. They are naturally very connected to us. And this sense of connection is what they need in order to learn, to build friendships, to build resilience and confidence as they grow. And that when children don't feel connected, their behavior goes off track more easily. Many of young people's difficulties and the challenges we face in our relationships with young people can be addressed by a focus on building, maintaining, and repairing that feeling of connection. When children do go off track, surprisingly, fostering laughter and play and setting limits and supporting children to have good, hearty cries and tantrums actually helps our children feel more connected with us. It helps them work through the emotions that are driving their difficult behaviors. And honestly, the process isn't really different for us adults. We can lose our sense of connection, and we can go off track, too. The process for getting ourselves back on track is not all that different from how we would help our children get more on track, and we're going to talk more about that later. Our experience is that fundamentally it's no different when our children are 5 than when they are 12 or 15, and today we want to outline some of the challenges of staying close to younger younger, older people. Since building, maintaining, and repairing our connection with our child is the first place to start. Hand in Hand offers a lot of classes, support groups, in-person and online, booklets, podcasts. There are online discussion groups. There are Facebook groups. There are teleseminars like this one and trainings for parents and professionals. And we'll give you more information how to access more of that at the end of this call. And if you want a really comprehensive summary of the hand-in-hand approach, Patty Whitfler, the founder of Hand in Hand, has just released a book called Listen, and it's a fantastic read. And we will send you a link in the email that follows this teleseminar. And if you're listening later to this teleseminar, you can find access to that book through the Hand in Hand website, www.handinhandparenting.org, and just use the search function to look for Listen. We are going to do the first part of this call on lecture mode. That means that you'll be muted just to keep background noise down. If you have a question, you can raise your hand by pressing star 2. If you need to mute yourself for some reason, you can press star 6. And if you need to unmute, you can press star 7. Madeline. I'm not hearing Madeline right now.
Sorry, I'm talking to myself. Thank you. I'm Madeline Winter, and I'm the mother of a 12-and-a-half-year-old girl. It's the summer here, and I would have to say this is the summer of the end of childhood, as we've known it. Things are shifting and changing. They've been shifting and changing for a couple of years, but suddenly I can tell my daughter's launched into the all of the brain and body changes that mark adolescence. And about 2 months ago, we're at the dinner table and she offered her opinion about something. And we're not short of an opinion in my household, but her vehemence and her passion and the depth of her feeling were really different from anything I've heard from her before. Was like everything was moving around inside her, her brain's expanding. And there was just this extra charge to what she was saying. And I thought, oh, my God, we're here. This is it. I've been using and teaching Hand in Hand since way before she was born. But I'm really excited to be learning it anew as she grows up and walking alongside other parents who are on the same journey. I just love parents of preteens and teens. I love that we've got some experience under our belts. I love that we understand that this is not really about, you know, some short-term difficulty getting in the car seat, eating peas or doing homework, but it's about the long haul. It's about growing young adults and keeping them safe. And the goal is to have them want to be around us at the end of it all, when they've got their wings and flown. So that's me. Do you want to say anything more about yourself, Rebecca?
No, I love what you say about really, really landing in the parenthood of a preteen. You know, I've got a 12-year-old as well, and it's been such a joy to watch the wit emerge, you know, even when sometimes it's biting at me a little bit, just to see that foray into adulthood is so exciting. It's such an exciting time to witness in our children. And the only other thing I wanted to say was that I did not come to Hand in Hand as a parent. I was hired to go to Hand in Hand instructor training by the Parent Cooperative Nursery School where I work, and they wanted me to be able to teach Hand in Hand to the parents at my school, so I went, and it had such a profound effect on my own personal parenting relationship with my children that it's just been, I almost want to say revolutionary for how I handled the development of my children, and I'm really happy to be here tonight and sharing that with everybody.
Cool.
What we're hoping that you will get from this call today is a sense of how much your preteen really wants and needs you, even though sometimes it might not look like that. And secondly, that your role has changed as a parent, but it is certainly not less important than it was when your child was younger. It's really, really important to pay close attention to your whole relationship with your child. We think of it as keeping the relationship bank balance right. There are really concrete, practical things you can do to build credit in your relationship with your preteen. There are ways to make deposits into this balance, and there are ways to make withdrawals from this balance. And those deposits you can make can really help things go smoothly with your preteen or older child. And the listening tool of special time is a really efficient way to put credit in that relationship bank. How we do special time, it might change a little bit as our children get older, but the basic principles are the same. And finally, we found it's pretty hard to parent this way unless you look to yourself. We want you to know where you can get support for yourself as a parent. Unlike other stages of parenting, in general, you are not going to get through your child's adolescence on grit alone. So we're going to talk some about the adult-to-adult listening tool of listening partnerships. And we're hoping to have some time towards the end to answer questions.
Thank you. I want to talk a little bit about how we define preteen and adolescence so that you know the age range that we're talking about. And when we say preteen, we're generally talking about children between the ages of about 8 and 12. Recent research is suggesting that while compared with the adolescent period, it's not quite as volatile. There's still a lot going on for young people physically at this age and developmentally. And when we say teenage, we really mean adolescence. And that definition has changed over the years. These days, it's generally accepted that it extends from about 12 till 24, which is well beyond what we used to, you know, think of as the teen years. And I don't know how old your children are, but the eyes might be rolling and the doors might be slamming at your place. they sometimes do here. But the research is really clear. Our kids want us at this age and stage, and they need us. There's something called parent-child connectedness, which researchers have dubbed the super protective factor. And having a close and connected relationship with a caring adult who listens to the child's feelings is, according to the research, the single strongest indicator that an adolescent will reach adulthood without experiencing stuff we don't want them to experience, like unwanted teen pregnancy or violence, without becoming addicted to drugs or tobacco and without dropping out of high school. So there's a whole lot in between those kind of scenarios and where we want to be, but you and their sense of connection with you is vital to that. And the challenge is to understand how to get connected and how to stay connected. Rebecca.
Our children in this stage are going through huge changes in their brains. And, you know, people tend to associate the teen years with big shifts in the hormones. But it's not just the chemical makeup of the blood. It's much more complex than that. We need to understand how their brains are changing, and the experience of young people in the world and how they are treated in the world in order to know how best to respond to them. The preteen and adolescent brain is like a construction site. it is going through a huge proliferation of growing synapses and neurons and connections that will be pruned later in adolescenthood, something that hasn't really happened to that great of an extent since the toddler years. And things are often out of balance or absent even, but that's very normal at this point. It affects a lot of important things. It affects their ability to assess risk and consequences. It affects their need to push back and negotiate more. And a big compelling need to be with and be accepted by their friends and their peers. And one thing that our children, when they're reaching this stage, are not doing to the extent that they might used to have been doing, is they're not reassuring us that we are doing okay. Their lives at this point are, it's almost like they're pregnant. They are going through this huge internally consuming process, and they don't have the wherewithal to be looking after us. And gone are a lot of the kind of spontaneous bits of affection they would offer us. And while all these things are changing on the inside, things can really be getting tighter for them because of what they're going through in the world. They have come up against really years of not necessarily being very respected, not being given control, perhaps being belittled, put down, and certainly not consulted on a lot of things. It is really emotionally demanding to try to work out how to fit in and how to stand out in the new social landscape that's developing at this age. And sometimes young people at this age can turn on each other. It can be vicious and very hard to take for these kids. And there's not that nice, unstructured playtime that they used to get. Playtime that allowed them to connect without all the fuss and just have a good laugh more often. And maybe one of the biggest challenges that our older children are facing is they don't have the same ability to release their emotional tensions as easily as when they were younger. It becomes more important not to be seen as a baby. It's definitely not cool to show that you're hurt by the social dramas that are going on and the barbs that are being thrown about. Some young people learn on pain of social death or ostracism to just keep a lid on their feelings. And sometimes they're not experiencing the same loose, easy cries that they used to have or the full-body tantrums they used to have. And that can mean that getting and staying close to our older young people is not as easy as it used to be. They have this tight lid on things, and when we move towards them, it can pull up this big wad of feelings that they've had under control all day, and it can fly out of them. And they need to fight. They need to push against the things that have happened and against the message that they shouldn't show their feelings about all of this. And that may make them look angrier. They may not be as polite. Sometimes they even need to get physical. There's a lot to understand about this complex process, but it's really important that we remember that it's not personal and it's not intended to be hurtful towards us. They are just too busy on the inside to reassure us as they go through this process.
And I think with these changes, our role has changed in quite profound ways. Our preteens and teens are figuring out the whole world for a second time, having consolidated all the stuff they know and have learnt as younger people. Everything moves around again. And in that process, we're still really important, but our role is changing. when our children are young, we're on center stage in our relationship with them. I don't know that we use a listening tool called Special Time, which we'll talk about a bit later, but I don't know that my daughter ever turned me down when she was younger for an offer of special time. But these days it's something that's a bit trickier. She's got her own agendas and things she wants to do, and you know, there's an important place for one-on-one time with me, but it's not quite at my beck and call in the way that it was when she was younger. I think that as our children get older, we need to shift to being something a bit like the heat in the room. When we're there, we're not much noticed, but things get uncomfortable pretty fast if we're not around. It's a lower key role, although it has moments where we have to step up and really do what has to be done. But it's just as important as the sort of constant, more constant sort of workload of parenting when our children were younger. I've found it helpful to think about my relationship with my preteen as a kind of bank balance, and my job is to make sure that it's in the black and not in the red. And I don't want the account to get overdrawn. And as parents, we always have to provide guidance and limit setting to our children. But every time we step in, we actually use up emotion, what I would call emotional credit in what you could think of as our relationship bank. And we need to use that credit up really carefully and judiciously. And we need to be looking to build up that credit whenever we can. At this stage, it depends on your story. It may not have been that different when your child was younger, but we don't really know at this stage when we're going to be called on to make a withdrawal. And sometimes those withdrawals on the bank account have to be really quite big. You know, we really have to step in around something. You know, like being out too late or driving with older intoxicated drivers or getting off the screen so homework can get done. In order to sort of prepare for those times, our focus, it's very easy for our focus to get caught on the withdrawal side, but actually we need to push it to a focus on building credit. And I want to talk a little bit about the habits we can get into of making too many withdrawals from the bank account and not focusing enough on building credit. It's an area where our relationship with our children can get really out of balance and can get caught in what I call a relationship rut. Our relationship as our children get older with them is more complex. It has history, their struggles and our mistakes. And we parents tend not to be as fresh as we used to be. There's a kind of relief in the growing independence of our children, but we're also kind of tired. And because they're older, we start to hope that things will get easier, that they'll pick up their clothes or remember their sports gear. But we're often disappointed. As we've just heard, they've actually got a lot going on, and there's ways that it's really not easy for them to keep it all together. So overall, I think at this stage, there's often less credit in the relationship than we might have enjoyed when they were younger. One of the other things too, I think, that contributes to the relationship ruts that we can get into is that every part of parenting reminds us of our own childhood, even if we're not aware that this is happening. And it's no less so now that your children are heading into adolescence. In fact, for most of us, adolescence was something we couldn't, certainly for myself, I couldn't get away from it fast enough. I didn't even want to think about going back there to open the lid on what was really, it was a hard time. It isn't for everyone, but for many of us, it is. So it sits there, and it often means that we're easily triggered by our children, especially when they're taking risks or being uncooperative or seeming to be short-sighted and not seeing the bigger picture. Though, in my experience, you can't really tell what you're going to get triggered around, but a lot of the places we get triggered as parents are actually to do with our own experience when we were that age. And this confuses us. It adds extra fuel to our worries and our concerns for our children, and it gets in the way of being able to really understand what's going on for them. And if we don't understand this, we can get caught in constantly feeling that we need to set limits and we need to badger them and remind our children of things and police their routines and follow them up. But the problem with this is that it tends to wear away at the credit and in our relationship with them. And there isn't as much easy credit as there was. So we may need to be differently careful about how we use up the credit, and we need to make sure we have some in reserve for the really important fights and exercises in limit setting that are going to have to happen, and not chew it up in stuff that really turns out not to be that important. I often ask parents to do a kind of audit of their relationship with their child. How many of your interactions with your child work to increase the credit in your relationship, and how many eat away at it and end up in power struggles and ongoing skirmishes which don't ever seem to shift or resolve? Later on, we'll talk a bit about listening partnerships, but for us, the adults, listening partnerships are a really good place to sort through our relationship bank balance with our children and decide which of the withdrawals that we need to make are really important and which ones we can drop for a while, and how we might go about building up credit. One of the really fantastic ways to build credit is what Rebecca's about to talk about, which is the listening tool of special time. Hand in Hand teaches several listening tools, play-based and listening to children's upsets, but special time is a gem. So, Rebecca.
Yeah, special time is a gem. And it's a wonderful way to really put credit into that relationship balance. Special time is a really nice way to build closeness. And it has some very specific guidelines. It is a clearly defined time. You're going to start it at a specific time, and you're going to time it until it's finished. And we'll talk more about that later. It is one-on-one with our child. We are totally focused on the child when we are with them. We are putting aside our parental busyness. We're not answering the phone. We are not checking our emails. All of that is pushed to the side, and we are only paying close attention to our child. We are being interested in whatever it is they want to do, and not only interested, but our endeavor is to really be delighted in whatever it is our child wants to do. We let them take the lead. We're not making suggestions for what to do at special time. It's really following their lead. And with older children, there are some things that we want to try not to do in special time. Because we have this history with our children at this point, we can have more of those ruts developed. We can have a habit of our attention going on the things that aren't going right. So we like to make sure that special time, especially with our preteens, is a trouble-free zone. So during special time, we don't bring up sore topics, we don't ask prying questions, and we don't refer to any of the things that are difficult in our lives together. We just want to create this very safe, trouble-free zone with our child, and certainly not go into that space with a discussion of how they need to clean up their rooms or not talk back or not be on the screen so much. There's none of that during special time. It's really just about building credit. And so you're not going to make it conditional. It is not a reward for doing something or an incentive. You are doing it just to build up that connection with your child, that relationship credit, that's really going to make the other aspects of your relationship go more smoothly. As a general rule in Hand in Hand, we do recommend naming and announcing special time. Doing this helps us hold to the commitment. We know how long we need to last because no one can sustain that degree of attention indefinitely. So it really helps us hold that concentrated attention when we know that there's going to be a defined end to it. And it's also helpful for our children to know that they can count on our full attention for this defined amount of time. Special time can really change as children get older. I've heard a lot, and I think Madeline will speak more to how special time can change as our children get older. But for my own 12-year-old daughter, she really still responds to special time the way she did when she was 6 and 7. She's very excited about it. She asks for it. She's enthusiastic about it. And what we do is the same thing, really, that we've done for the last couple of years in special time. She still wants treats and screen time. But one thing that's really shifted is what she has been asking for on screens. This is one of the areas I had some discomfort around with special time. What do I do when my daughter starts asking for videos that I feel are really inappropriate? I have two girls, and I'm very conscious about the messages media sends our girls about attractiveness and what it means to be a woman. And I have had worries that some screen times might actually be damaging, and I have to get my own listening time to help me deal with those feelings. But when my daughter was younger, everything she wanted to watch on a screen was something I was aware of, something that I had brought to her life, or at least I knew how it had come into her life. But now, with my 12-year-old, she comes to me at special time wanting to watch YouTubes of things I have never heard of or seen myself. And sometimes it's really stuff I don't approve of, stuff I would absolutely not let her watch outside of special time. But this is what's happening. My daughter is coming to me excited to share what she's learning about from her friends with me. And she's letting me into that world. And because it's special time, I'm keeping my mouth shut. And we're developing this relationship habit that she can share the interests of her peers with me, and I don't judge her. And so she comes to me with insider peer information, you know, who got caught with slime at school, et cetera. And I think that it's the dynamic we have set up through our special time that really makes that inclusion of me possible.
Thanks, Rebecca. It's very sweet. I want to talk a little bit about why special time works. It works to create a trouble-free zone in our relationship with our children, which can be particularly helpful through adolescence. And once our children get the hang of it, they can really understand that we're not going to take over or criticize or judge them. Once they get that, it provides a safe space for them to show us things that are going on for them and what they're concerned about. I think we're so big and we define everything so much, and that's so much been the habit of our relationship with them, that we have to make space so that they can show us what they're concerned about. And even if nothing new or spectacular or particularly, you know, quote unquote special happens during special time itself, it can serve to warm up the relationship So often, you know, in after special time in our house, in the hour or two following, my daughter will bring up issues and upsets and worries that she's been preoccupied with in a way that she doesn't tend to do at other times. And I've learnt that I need to remember to be ready to listen if she brings stuff up after special time. But there's something about the safety that builds in my relationship with her after special time that means she can tell me things that she might not otherwise tell me. And special time is refreshing. It can refresh our relationship with our young people. It lets us learn new things about our children, which cuts across the way relationships get stuck in a rut where we think we know exactly what's coming next. And especially if we've had some troubles in our relationship with our child, we can get very stuck in thinking we know what's going to come next. It turns the tables. So for a short while in special time, children are powerful, knowledgeable, and they get to set the agendas. And don't worry, they have agendas for us. There's a story, it's quite an old one, on the Hand in Hand website, but it's so one of my favourites, and it's about a mum who decides she's had a pretty stormy relationship with her boy, that she decides to set aside her usual worries and agendas and follow his lead. And he takes her fishing and challenges her to put a worm on a hook. And she tries to get help from some people who are standing around, and he makes sure that they don't help her because, it, you know, her job is to figure it out for herself. And what happens is that she really notices the extra warmth in her relationship with her boy afterwards. So giving our children that space can really warm things up between us. One of my colleagues did some special time with her daughter, and her daughter took them for a run, and her mum wasn't that fit, so she did her best, but it was a struggle. But on the way, her daughter said, on the way home, her daughter said, you know, "Hey, Mum, this is a great time to talk. How are you?" And her mum couldn't do much more than gasp, but you get the picture. It her mum's willingness to follow the agenda that her daughter had set opened up opportunities for communication. Sometimes going at special time directly doesn't work as well for older children. The process may need to be more on their terms, which is developmentally makes sense, which means that they're more wanting to choose the time and place that works for them rather than at our convenience. When my daughter was little, I could just bowl up to her with the blinding light of my warm attention and suggest announced special time, and she would never refuse. But often now I get turned down. I think partly it's that the direct attention can be more than our children can stand given how much they've had to be stuffing down all day. And I think there are also interesting brain changes which mean that they get the cues wrong. So when we come with some well-intentioned offer, and in this case it's the offer of special time, they actually can experience it as a hostile gesture. It's to do with how their brains are changing. But if you find that, you know, your offer of special time's not being taken up, I challenge you to take it on as unannounced special time. You can notice times when your preteen welcomes closeness and try and set these up a bit more often. You can get back to playing. You can think about the games they liked to play when they were little. Or you can take up their invitations to play. But when you do this, you need to remember that overall your job is to lose. Or at least to match your skill to theirs so that they get to test their strengths, however it is, and be victorious without being overwhelmed. Sometimes with older children, you might need to win every now and again, but you need to keep an eye on your own inclination to want to win, because generally that's not what it's about. Some people find that taking a drive is a really creates a space where our children open up to us. And I've heard stories of parents who'll, you know, start on the drive home from school and quietly take a different route when their child starts to talk about something, so that they can be in that space for longer. But there's something about having some of your attention on the road and not facing them directly that can make it safer for young people to open up once they're a bit older. And you can decide to have a real connection injection in your relationship with your young person. Take a weekend, a day away with just you and them, or scheduled time with you and whoever else you're parenting with in your child. And do your best to have it fit the principles of special time. If you haven't announced it as special time, because you're wanting to avoid, you know, being rebuffed, you'll need to be sure that you keep to the commitment of special time. So you'll need to put the phone away, to pay full attention, and not just peel out when you get sick of it. One of the things I found particularly useful when my daughter was younger about special time was that because it's announced and we know when it begins and we know when it finishes, I knew how long I had to last, and I knew I couldn't just squib out when I, you know, didn't want to be there anymore. And the thing about special time is that for our young people, knowing how long we're prepared to hang in there with them is one of the things that makes it work so well for our children. So we need to stick to it, even when we haven't announced the time that we're going to be there for. They come to know that we'll hang in there. If you're out for a day, you'll probably have to make some suggestions or provide some direction at some point if you're spending an extended time. One of the reasons we suggest special times timed and time limited is that you can really only hang on to your either need or inclination to give direction for so long. And if you know it's only half an hour, you can hang on to it for half an hour. But sometimes our children need just a much bigger connection injection than half an hour will provide. So I think through all of this, you're going to need to, if you're doing a longer time, which is not as clearly defined, you'll end up having to make some suggestions, but you need to abide by the general principles of special time, that they're in charge, that you're following their lead, that you're not making anything except absolutely necessary suggestions. And those principles will help you keep your attention on your preteen or adolescent and not on your own agenda. So Rebecca's going to talk a bit about how you can top up your own bottle, because pouring it out all the time can be really demanding.
Yeah, it can feel difficult at times, for sure. Being the parent of an older young child, it can feel very difficult to kind of do that constant undivided positive attention. We have to put away our own irritations at our children, our own anger at our children, and for a lot of us, that is an attempt to give our children something that we did not necessarily receive as children and may not be receiving as adults. And to help us with our hard feelings about that that come up, we recommend listening partnerships. A listening partnership is a time where two people agree to listen to each other in turn without making any judgments, without making comments, and without offering any suggestions, and agreeing to keep everything absolutely confidential. And the wonderful things this kind of listening gives us is it gives us an opportunity to just talk, just share about how our parenting is going and how tired we feel and how we don't want to have to do the work and we wish they would just do what they were told. I find that complaining can go a very long way towards making something that looked impossible, something like not bugging my 12-year-old for one entire day. Complaining to someone else made that doable. I could express my frustration to someone else and therefore not have to express it to my child during that period. It's really helpful to offload about all of the negatives, and then it makes us better able to reach for what we love and admire about our young people. When we can complain to someone else about all the negative things we see, then that leaves us to regard our children more with warmth when we are with them. It also gives us the opportunity to regularly ask ourselves, what was it like when I was this age? This is really important as we approach the teen years, because the way we experienced our adolescence will affect how we parent our adolescents. And, you know, having a listening partnership gives us the ability to think and make plans. When we speak through what is hard for us, the challenges we're facing, a lot of times we can get our brain back online and really arrive at a smart, thoughtful decision about what to do going forward rather than being steered by our triggers and our irritations. Madeline, you do a listening partnership with your husband about kind of this, what was it like when I was this age, don't you?
Yeah, we do. I wouldn't recommend beginning a listening partnership with the partner with whom you live with, the person you live with, or the person that you parent with. I think it's really great to get a sense of what a listening partnership is with someone that you probably don't have a relationship at all with, so that it's like you're not likely to have the triggers that are in your relationship sort of, you know, trying to find a space to talk about them with someone who's that close to you can sometimes, it can be difficult for someone to remember that what they're supposed to be doing is listening to you. But my husband and I have been using this process for a really long time. And one of the things that we've found really useful is we do 5 minutes listening time every morning. There's a bunch of topics we've learnt we need to steer clear of because we have trouble listening to one another around those particular topics. But what we found really useful is once a week we've given ourselves the assignment of asking each other, what was it like for me when I was X and now our daughter's 12? So we're working through our early teen years. And we find we don't really want to go back there, but once we do, with a thoughtful listener who cares about us by our side, there's a real sense of relief about it. It's like even if our attention's not directly on it, it's sitting there weighing us down. And I think probably this part of our life, our own adolescence, is one of those stages that we probably never really got to talk about. When it happened, we probably didn't get to talk about it much afterwards, and we still need to talk about it. And I find it surprising what turns up. There are things that I've forgotten which come to light when I answer this question, what was it like for me when I was 12? And it can suddenly make sense of why I'm struggling to respond with patience or why I'm having trouble listening to my child, because it turns out it's landing on that spot. And there's something about going to those places with someone who cares about us and who's listening well, that helps us get to the emotion that's at the bottom of them and resolves the tension there. And we can, you know, think better. I've lately been having a lot of feelings about my preteen. She's just starting high school. And in one of these listening partnerships, I realized that when I was that age, launching into a big new phase of life, my parents' marriage failed and they split up. And it can be, no wonder I was feeling agitated. And what's interesting about this process is that sometimes we, even something as big as that, we don't really realize, we can often not realize that it's sitting there affecting our judgment and confusing us about the difference between how things are for our children and how things were for us. With these tools, the truth is that how things are for your children is not much at all like how it was for you. And our worries that come from our own experience of adolescence need to be brought out into the light of day and resolved, so they're not sort of sneaking around influencing our judgment about our young people. We've got to the end of what it is that Rebecca and I particularly wanted to talk about. Rebecca, do you want to just summarise what we've talked about, and then if people are wanting to ask any questions, you're most welcome. We have a few minutes spare to do that. And in order to ask a question, you can press star 2 and that'll raise your hand on my board here and we'll get to you shortly. We may not be able to answer everyone's question, but we'll do our best. So, and there are places that you'll be able to take your, we'll let you know places that you can take your questions. When we get to the end of the call. So, Rebecca, do you want to just wrap up what we've covered?
Yeah, just to get our cliff notes to kind of remember our main points on this. I want you to remember that the definition of preteens and adolescents is very broad. You know, think of it as this age from, preteens starting at 8 and adolescents really going from 12 to 24, you know, and expect that kind of not quite developed brain that whole time. And remember that that's what's happening for our kids, is that their brains are just going through huge structural changes. And they're doing a ton of work. I love that analogy of the pregnancy, that they're really growing themselves inside, and that's really where all of their focus and energy is. And even though they don't necessarily look like it all the time, they still really want to be connected to us. It's just that our role in connection to them has changed a bit. And in order to keep that role, the kind of role that is most connected, pay really close attention to keep that relationship balance in the black by avoiding relationship ruts. Try to get out of the correcting habit that we can get into, and really focus on building emotional credit. And remember that special time, whether announced or unannounced, can really help build up that emotional credit. And really remember to take care of yourself. It is very difficult, if not impossible, to be the best parent we can be when we don't have an outlet and support for our own big feelings about parenting. So get yourself support. Get yourself listening partnerships so that you have that outlet. Thanks, Madeline.
Thank you. Someone's put their hand up, so I will unmute you. Somewhere in British Columbia. Hi. Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Yes, it's you. Hi.
Hi. My question is with regards to kind of what you mentioned about going through a situation where your parents split up. and kind of dealing with that. My husband and I have gone through a trial separation. We're working things out, and this all started happening when our daughter was in when she was 13. And how best to deal with that, because you know, it's I'm going through stuff, he's going through stuff, and she's at this time where she's going through tremendous changes as well.
Have you got anything you'd say, Rebecca?
No, no. it's not something that we've had. It's not something that I had experience as a child with, nor as a parent with. So I'd love to hear you, having had gone through this, what you have to say.
I think that the degree to which you can keep your relationship with your ex-partner in good shape will make a difference. And, you know, that's probably not straightforward, given that you sort of have ended up deciding you don't want to be in the kind of relationship that you were in before. But, and I think the other things I've noticed from listening to lots of parents around this sort of thing is that I think we need, like, the ideal is that you're both in, the adults are in good communication with one another. But the bottom line is that children can negotiate, I think they can negotiate a lot, so long as they have at least one person on their team who's prepared to listen to whatever they have to offer. So the fact that you have in your control to make some kind of special time space for your child, whether it's an announced space, which I recommend trying, but if not that, then really sticking to the discipline of spending one-on-one time with your child where it goes their way is going to be really important. And special time is a particularly useful tool when we're in the middle of some kind of transition. So moving schools is often a transition that where things get tight. Changes in, you know, domestic relationships and relationship split-ups will be a space where things get tight. At those times of transition, it's really worth your while to step up the amount of special time that you're offering. It creates credit. It really does make things easier, and it will also create space for your safety for your child to show you more about what's going on for them. So the flip side is that if there's a lot going on, you may find that they are more volatile when you up the sort of special time, but ultimately that's kind of what you're after. You're after going for something where a child feels safe to show you what's going on for them. Is that helpful?
Yes, it is, actually. And because part of me was thinking, okay, this is, we're going through this thing, and I need to back off a bit. And in a way, I needed to back off with regards to some things, but in terms of having more opportunities to connect, I think I needed to step up to the plate more.
Yeah, and you may not need to be stepping up to the plate quite as much indefinitely, but any big change like this, your child's going to need, they're using up their credit. And so you need to be making sure that you're filling up their bucket of connection a bit more, so there's just a bit more slack around the challenges that they're up against. And you'd asked a couple of questions also. You'd sent us a question beforehand about phone rules.
Yes.
That
is correct. And yes, and it was interesting because teens hate it when moms talk to each other, I think. And as a result of my discussions with some of the other parents, we've come up with more stringent phone rules in terms of checking in times and so on. Because I had actually caught her on her laptop watching some, I mean, she's good in terms of she's not going to watch anything inappropriate that I've ever seen on her stuff, but still watching music videos at 2 a.m. on a school night. And so strict rules have been applied with regards to that. And that's hard because her dad seems to think in a way that she's old enough, she needs to be able to make some decisions. And I said, yeah, but some of these things are really addictive. And regardless of how responsible she is with regards to some things, watching YouTube videos at 2 a.m. on a school night is not conducive to being able to function in school the next day.
Yeah. And I think around that there's a, you know, we could spend a whole call on media and phones and internet and young people. But you're up against it, I think, because it has an addictive pull. I think that there are some, I mean, my colleague, for instance, Kathy Gordon, she basically has made a decision that during the week time, it's a device free, apart from what has to happen around doing schoolwork, it's a device free time. And it's like trying to negotiate around the edges of it just proved unworkable. And I think sometimes we have to make judgments about what's workable and what's unworkable in terms of which skirmishes we're able to keep thinking around and the points at which we get overwhelmed. And I think we need to find places where we can talk about, find space in our relationship with our older young people where we can both talk about what we want. But I don't think we want to be shy of saying, look, this is not workable. What we do need to understand is that when we do that, I mean, anyone who's using something addictively is using it in order to keep feelings at bay. That's kind of, by my book, that's the definition of an addiction. It's functioning to keep feelings at bay. So if we say you can't have that thing, then what we need to be prepared to handle is the feelings that will come in fast behind setting that limit. And it's effectively a limit setting exercise. And when a young person can't just accept the limit that we've proposed, if we've done the work on our end to make sure that it's a reasonable limit, I think we do need to kind of, if we can take it to a listening partnership and just check that we're not just being reactive, but we're fairly confident it's a reasonable limit. When we bring it to our child, we need to accept that they're going to have feelings about it. But the feelings are the process of, they're what's driving the addictive behaviour. They're what they're trying to keep a lid on. It'll come out probably at you. It may not be polite. It could be a little messy. But it's basically the feeling that erupts when you bring a limit like, you know, some, you know, tough rules around screens. Those are the feelings your child is actually trying to keep a lid on by using screens. So I think at this stage, especially around technology, I mean, it never hurts for us to take it to a listening partnership. Like my experience of screens is just as a young person was just so different. Mm-hmm. from my own young people's, you know, from my daughter's experience. And there are useful things for us to kind of pull up into the light of day about our own experience so that we're not coming at the process from some piece of our own past, but we're actually bringing a limit around something that needs to really happen for our children. So it never hurts to check and use a listening partnership to check. But sometimes when we, and that's why we need to be focusing on building credit in our relationship because, you know, our young people at this age can be getting to mucking around with stuff that that ultimately they're life and death decisions, and we really do need to be prepared to step in and bring a firm limit, and then be prepared to listen to the eruption that happens and manage the eruption that happens so that we protect ourselves, because sometimes, you know, they're big now, they're not little. That eruption is necessary. It's a necessary process to having them come to an understanding of what's workable. And if you lose it in that, then back off. Go find a listening partner, and work on how you're feeling, and come back again when you're a little clearer. Is that useful?
Thank you. Yes, it is. Thank you very much.
Our pleasure. Does anyone else, we're kind of pretty well over time now, so does anyone else have a burning question? Otherwise we'll just, actually probably we shouldn't. I'm thinking I may do a Q&A, because we had a few questions which we haven't got to. So look out for information about that, where you might be able to get on and ask further questions. But I think we probably should wrap up so that this can go out into the wide world. So the things that we just want to talk about in wrapping up are, I mean, in particular, I really don't want parents at this age and stage to be on their own. It really makes a difference to have company. And I think there's a way that protecting our adolescent children, protecting their privacy, the fact that our lives are not, you know, we don't tend to bump into people in the school ground in the same way that we did when our children were younger. And it may not be so easy to build those supportive networks around our parenting. We need to actually create spaces where we get the support that we need so that we can work through the kind of mixture of our feelings and our thinking and have the best confidence that what we're offering our children is our thinking and not just, you know, reacting. So I really do encourage you to figure out how to get a listening partnership where you can do some of that. Some of the best ways to do that, I can highly recommend there's a Facebook group run by Hand in Hand for parents of preteens and older kids, which is worth joining. I'm not quite sure how you can find that, except maybe you can email me. My email is madeline.s.winter@gmail.com. I'm also going to, I'm running a starter class for parents of preteens, which I'm really excited to be running through Hand in Hand. That starts on February 24th. That class runs for 6 weeks, and it's a combination of video and in-person calls, plus most of the coursework is sort of focused at parents of younger children, so we'll have some extra materials to help us work through the particular ways we need to use the hand-in-hand listening tools with older children, because it shifts and changes a bit. But I'd love to have you there, and there's still space in that class. And I run a regular support call, which seems to work well because, I don't know, I find parents at this stage can use a bit of flexibility. So I run a regular support call where you can join for between 2 and 8 calls, and we'll send a link to that out in the email that follows. I think that's all that's coming up in the immediate future. But hook up. I really do recommend the Facebook group, which I moderate, and get company in this journey, because it really isn't one that's easy to get through on grit alone. Is there anything you wanted to add, Rebecca?
I just wanted to add my gratitude at your having shown up here tonight, parents. We are really busy people, and it is not easy to keep on trying to improve and keep on trying to be better. And you're amazing parents for taking an hour plus of your time on a Sunday to, or not for everybody, Sunday for some of us, for being here. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, I'm really pleased you were here. Feel free to contact us if you have any other questions. Have a great evening. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us. Hand in Hand is here to help you get the support you need for your work as a parent. To download podcasts on additional parenting topics, go to handinhandparenting.org/store. We look forward to connecting with you again soon.